All right, let's go. All right. Who said that there? What was that there that said that? You told me the story?
That was McConaughey. What's his first name?
Matthew.
Matthew McConaughey. That he did that when he won a Oscar. And he stole that. Well, he didn't steal it. He borrowed it from Jim Morrison. I think was doing a concert in Miami. And there's a thing, him going, all right. And then he breaks into a song. So that's pretty good. That's where that comes from.
All right. Don Cherry's Grapevine, and we're going to talk about the guy I had at the Prospect game, Carey Price. I think it's sad that he did what he did. Well, what do you think, Tim?
Well, it's just he's under a lot of pressure, right?
And a lot of pressure.
He makes a lot of money, and the fans constantly remind him of that. And everybody said, during the play.
$10 million.
Everybody said last year, Montreal will only go as far as Carey Price will take him. I mean, that's a pretty heavy thing. And
you're absolutely right. What do you think, Cindy?
What do I think? Well, if he wants out so bad, then, he has to take a pay cut. So he's made his choice. He either makes a lot of money in Montreal or he goes
elsewhere. Boy, you people are tough people.
That's the way it is. Choices are made.
All you have to do is take a look at the playoffs last year. Montreal is going along pretty good, and all of a sudden he turns in. You can't get a pee by him, and they win. They put out Toronto.
Yeah, I got to tell a funny story. I laughed. I was watching that All or Nothing. The thing with the Leafs on Amazon.
Yeah,
and so they're having just before, I think it was before game 7, and they're having this big powwow. I don't know who these guys are. They're all sitting around, and poor Sheldon Keefe's got to sit there and listen to these guys. And the one guy goes, well, you know what the problem with this team is? It's the Leafs. We're getting in our own way. I just wish Sheldon Keefe would have said, no, our problem is Carey Price. That's our problem.
That reminds me, like when we were in our losing streak and we were on a beauty. And I think I can always remember, Maddie. Funny how you remember certain things. Maddie Hagman, wasn't one of my favorites, but he was a pretty good guy. He's coming back with a guy, and he just turned and looked. He was back checking. He just turned and looked, and as the guy, as he was back check, as he turned and looked, the guy got the pass. You can't show the players that you're. That you're paranoid.
Like you weren't mad at Matty Hagman.
What mad at Hagman? No, but it wasn't this, but he turned, he had the guy. I'm walking over with it's just the general manager. And we were kind of friends then, Tom Johnson. And he says, and I said, well, that's not the only problem. Oh, not the only problem. It reminds me of Dubas. Yeah. I watched a little of that.
Well, I had a lot of fun watching it with you. We watched, after the podcast last Sunday, we watched a little bit of it, and I really had a good time with you watching it and some of your comments about it.
Well, the F word, it was in the paper that he was really surprised. Are they surprised that the F word comes out?
Yeah, they said if that word got banned, I think the NHL
would
collapse.
I mean, imagine in the paper... That's how out of they are with it, that they don't know what's going on. And he did use the F word. And I hate to say it, that word, I would not use in my books or anything like that because kids are listening to that. But that word is,
I said, they don't even know it. I said, did you swear that much? You gave me the look and all that. So
I remember there was a guy, I won't mention his name because he wouldn't appreciate it. He used to say it, pass the ketchup,
pass it, ketchup.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Well,
I don't know if you told the story about the little old lady that was sitting behind you. In that Montreal?
I was in Toronto. Toronto, believe it or not, folks, people will remember.
Well, they
people
had the
used
screens.
To walk back.
Yeah.
And I,
the people in the old Maple Leaf Gardens. There was nothing behind the players and the bench and the fans. Like you were literally
right in the fan. Guy go for a hot dog. So they put police at the end. They couldn't go. But I remember we were winning or something, or anything. And this, how many rows up? About 10 rows up. And she's sitting on the aisle. And she, you're filthy. And she really gave it to me. And I really felt bad because I looked up. It was about the same.
Didn't she say, Chair, you have a filthy mouth?
Filthy mouth. I didn't. Isn't that awful? God.
So you thought of your mother.
Yeah, I thought it was my same age as my mother. God, I thought, why do I swear like that? Like, you know, you get into the game, you don't even know. So I went up.
You went up into the stands.
I went into the stands, and I sat on the stairs beside her.
Yes.
And they got the camera on the thing. There's no coach. So didn't need a coach anyhow. So she said, I'll never forget this. I said, you know, I really feel bad. And I said, I'm sorry, I swear and everything. And she said, I said, you've heard that before. She said, yeah, but I didn't pay $200 to hear it. And she really gave it to me. Yeah. And I never forgot that.
So just...
Go back to Montreal, Carey Price.
Carey Price. But, is it just that Montreal is really hard on their goalies?
I mean, they are. And Tim, Bill Dernan, I remember before when I was a kid, there was a goaltender called Bill Dern. He was really good. His nerve shot. He just quit. He just quit. And Jerry McNeil. And any goaltender, I think in all of sports, I don't think there's... And Patrick Roy, remember they booed him?
Oh, that 9-1. Was classic when he went off the ice. Yeah,
and he said he'd never play here again. And then he come back and won the cup. But anyhow, I think what happens is Montreal... when you're in the net, you have more pressure on you than any other place in the world. And that's what I think happened to him. He just got tired. I think Carey got tired of being the number one guy all the time. And I remember in the prospect game, he was quite a serious guy. You know, he took everything serious and he took it to heart and he just couldn't take it anymore. And I admire him for what he did. You know, when I played, I think of Eddie, you guys just quit in the middle of the season. You come in and their equipment would be gone. You know.
So
just,
that happened in Springfield.
I sat beside a guy. I was playing for Spokane Comets. By the way, Seattle Crackers.
Crackers.
Whatever their name is, Crackers. They have the big S on the front of their, like, just like Spokane.
You look at it. I remember I saw a picture of it, and you look, you go, that's pretty close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's almost the same thing like that, County Madigan and all that. So anyhow, I'm playing for Spokane Comets, and this guy gave the puck away in the last 15 seconds or something. And, you know, it was nobody's fault. It was an accident. He gave it away, and he's sitting beside me, and he's throwing equipment, and he's crying. Yeah, the guy rest. Cruelest people in the world are hockey players, believe me. And they're kind of snickering at the guy, laughing, you know, throwing stuff. And I remember the coach's name, Roy McBride. I never forgot it. He just came in. He didn't say anything. He didn't give him heck or anything. He just, what happened, Gordy? That's it. And they took him away. He's crying.
He didn't finish the season.
Nope.
Gone.
And I remember Roy McBride got to look at me and he said, all I asked him was, what happened? And believe me, I'm laughing, we're having fun, and I'm having fun with it and everything like that. It is no fun. Carey Price, good luck to him.
Dad, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Spreads.ca. They're a Canadian-owned online casino and sportsbook, and they're Canadian-owned. That's the big thing. You see a lot of commercials now, and you have Canadians like promoting them, but they're not Canadian companies. So this
now, do they have to bet in American money?
A lot, yeah, most of them do, yeah. So, and you can bet Canadian money. And if you sign up today and use the promo Grapes, they'll match your deposit up to $250. They'll give you 10 spins on the big wheel for some big dough. And your first sports bet, they'll spot you $25. So you can't.
Sounds pretty good to me. I know I say that every week, but it sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, well, we're betting on the, I was betting on the baseball, and I bet the Red Sox the second game. And
I told you.
And I was watching it. It was 5-1. And I, oh, ye of little faith, I turned it off.
Not me.
And then I saw the little scroll and it said 12-6. I'm thinking, well, that can't be right.
Oh, no. They came
but
back.
But you, well, we're going to talk about Peter McNabb in a second. But, Dad, you called it. We were watching the game and the Tampa's was up, I think it was 5-1.
5-1.
And the guy stole home. And you said the Red Sox are just furious right now.
And you know, he was having a, he was arguing with the second baseman. I don't know what why he was arguing. But you don't do things like that in sports, because what happens is you remember. And you don't put on the number one power play with a minute to go, or you don't put on you know, your best players. You play, and I think that's one of the reasons that the people kind of liked, or other teams kind of liked, the Boston Bruins. I think they did. That if we were really beating a team, I would not play the number one line and number two line. I'd always play the third and fourth line. That's how we got 11 20-goal scores. And you know, it's funny thing is, you're absolutely right. When it was 5-1, that guy stealing home, I knew the Red Sox were going to come back and win. I just knew it. And I hung tough. And they were losing 5-1 at the time.
5-1 in the game, too. That's why I turned it off. And then, because I'm a Red Sox fan. And then, again, then they won.
I could hear that manager. Are you going to let that? I can't say what he called that guy.
So the third coach baseman can't tell that guy not to steal home.
No. What happened is, no, he did it on his own. I mean, steal home? I mean, yeah. What sense does that make?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but even if the coach couldn't say, don't do
no,
that.
No, don't. If it's 1-1.
Yeah.
Or 2-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like the guys you use that do that hot dog move around, you know, that pick up the puck behind the net.
Yeah, the cross move.
No, it depends on the score.
Right.
If it's 6-1, that's why I give that guy, the junior heck, for doing that. No, if it's 1-1 or 1-0, pretty good move. But you don't steal home or anything like that when you're winning 5-1.
So, Dad, speaking of the 11-20 goal scorers, your leading scorer was Peter McNabb. We talked about him a couple
43
weeks.
Goals.
We talked about him a couple of weeks ago.
Imagine that, 43 goals. A guy gets $6 million for scoring six. And he got 43 goals.
Right. And so I saw an interview with him just on the internet a few days ago. And this is what he said about you. He said, "What about playing for Don Cherry?" And he says, "I really enjoyed it. The most underrated ability Grapes had was 5 minutes into the game, he knew exactly who was playing well and who should get the extra minutes in the game. He had great bench management. He coached veteran players really well, and it was a veteran club. He had the ability to stretch a 3 or 4 game winning streak into a 7, 8, or 9, but he could instinctively pick the game that we were going to go south. Then he would have a field day with it. For the group at that time, I don't think we could have had a better coach." So my question is two things with this. How did you know who was playing well and who was not playing well? And number two, what did he mean by when you guys were going south, he'd have a field day with it? What was that all about?
I don't know. If you look out on the ice, you know, if you're a coach, you know who's playing well. And you had to have, you didn't, at the time, you didn't have, you didn't care one way or another. If he's not playing well, I don't care if he's number one draft choice, not playing. And the other one, what was the other one?
He said if the game was going south.
Oh,
that he'd have a field day with it.
Going south means that you're no way you're winning. And I don't know. I used to have fun back at the bench. I remember one time, we never ever got really slaughtered. But we're playing the Flames and Atlanta. We're just getting absolutely wiped out, and everything they shot went in. And I remember John McCauley, God love him. I said, "John, can we play this? Can we play this period straight time?" And he says, "No, but I'll tell you one thing: there's going to be no icings."
Didn't you used to say one time when things were going well about the power play?
Oh yeah, I said, "Okay, who wants to go on a power play? Don't hurt yourselves," and you know, stuff like that.
Well, he mentions bench management. Do you think that that's because you didn't have an assistant coach? Because now behind the benches, they're bumping into each other, and there seems to be no flow to the game. And you were the numero uno guy making all the decisions.
It's funny you say that. The first time I had an assistant coach was over. We were playing Team Canada. We were over in Sweden. I was the head coach. And we had a guy named Andre Boudreau. I think it was that. Andre Boudreau. And he had the defense. Well, I didn't. There's certain times I didn't want a certain defense on, and I didn't have control of it.
Absolutely, that only makes sense.
Yeah, and I knew when I coached the Boston Bruins and Colorado, and we had a pretty good team in Colorado. Don't think we did at the end. We did. We had a pretty good club in the end, except for the goaltender.
We all know.
And we won't go into that again.
Right.
And Ray Miron, the general manager, Ray Miron, spelled with an O. You're okay. But anyhow, if you're by yourself and you coach by yourself, you know what defense goes on with a certain time. So I used to have I had a grad time in Boston. And
so Dad, you know, you talk about bench management. I remember that, like, did you learn from guys like you played with Punch and Joe Crozier and all?
Yeah, Punch Imlach was the best coach I ever played for, and Crozier was right up there too. Eh? But the only trouble with Crozier is if you'd get behind, he'd just quit on the bench. He just, you know, you're on your own lines. And I remember losing 4-1. I never forget the score. And I was sitting beside Jerry Eamon. He was the captain. And before that, there was nothing back at the bench thing, and you could hear nothing. And I'm sitting beside Jerry, and we tied it up. And Joe, all of a sudden, Joe Crozier was he was the coach. He started to coach again. And I remember Jerry Eamon, he's Crow's coaching again.
Okay, Dad, we want to wish Sergeant Graham W. Clapp. He is going to be 102 years old.
Holy
Can you believe that? A lot of water under that.
He was the Devil's Brigade, and that was half an American and half Canadian.
That was a great movie.
And I saw that movie.
And William Holden was in it.
William Holden was in it, and I went to see it with my friend Whitey Smith, who was he joined it in a private in South Africa. He was in the South Africa War against Rommel and worked his way up right up to Rome.
Yeah. William Holden was in a lot of the movies that you liked. Bridge Over the River Kwai. He must have been in a lot of war movies, right?
Yeah, but Sergeant Clapp, isn't that unbelievable that a guy would be 103 years old?
102. The thing was, they called it back there the First Special Service Forces, and he joined that in 1942. And they went up to the Aleutians because they thought the Japanese were going to go along those things and then go into Alaska and then come down. So they went up there, and then they weren't there. So then they went to Anzio, and they held a beachhead there, in Italy, and they fought 99 consecutive days in combat.
Holy smokes.
And
I think they broke it up too.
Yeah. And then the Germans, that's when the Germans called them the Devil's Brigade. And they used to walk around at night after the battles, and they used to put stickers in German saying "the worst is yet to come."
Oh.
And they said there was 1,800 guys in the Devil's Brigade, and they accounted for 1,200 casualties and 7,000 prisoners.
Well, everybody knows, I say this all the time, and nobody believes it, that the Canadians were shock troops in the Second World War. The Germans knew Canadians were ready to attack. You know, they'd send their best troops. They'd send the paratroopers. Yeah. So the other armies used to put Canadians on to confuse them. Yeah. Because Canadians were the best fighters in the world because we were volunteers.
Right. And then this, you know, you hear all the SEALs, like, you know, Navy SEALs and Special Forces. These were the first guys. Like this.
You said Brad Pitt were.
And then in Quentin Tarantino's movie, The Inglourious Basterds, Brad Pitt's character wore their insignia on his shoulder patch. So Quentin Tarantino did the same because they were like in the movie, they were behind the lines.
Yeah.
And that's what originally what these guys were. So happy birthday, 102 years old, Sergeant Graham W. Clapp.
I imagine that.
So Dad, you know, the other day I had a friend of mine is a hockey mom, and she's just starting out. Actually, she's a hockey grandmother. And they have a little son that's about 8 years old. And she felt bad because they went and bought him used equipment. And I says, well, I don't really think that's a bad thing. What do you think of young kids and used equipment?
You know, what's the funny thing is, if you look at Eric Lindros, you know, Eric Lindros, he used equipment. And he was probably the best junior ever. And for a while there, he was the best in the National Hockey League of all time. And he used equipment. I use him. Well, Bobby Orr and those did too. But Eric Lindros, if he could use it, and you know, it's just starting to get broke in.
Yeah,
It's not like it's falling down and falling, you know, with big patches and stuff like that. It's just starting to broke in. And used equipment, there's nothing wrong with using used equipment at all.
Because the kids grow out of it so fast, and especially skates. I mean, Dell always had, we always would go and get used skates. And it was goalie, and he was a goalie, and we had goalie skates. I don't think we ever bought him a brand new pair of skates.
Well, yeah, we did. We went down to Don Simmons' place in
Mirror. Yeah, but there were the pads and everything.
Yeah.
But not the skates.
But I'll tell you one thing, boy, there's nothing wrong with used equipment at all.
No.
If my son or my grandson was growing up now, and he needed a new skates and stuff like that, we'd go to the what do they call that new? They have it over at I forget the name of it.
Well, we don't want to promote. There's lots of used equipment out there.
But there's one there. But anyhow,
because I remember I was talking we were just talking about it, and this was this lady's first kind of foray into hockey. She says, I can't believe how expensive it is.
Yep.
And that's what she said. She says, it boggles my mind how expensive it
well,
is.
Well, it's not as expensive as it used to be.
Yeah.
Sticks used to be, yeah, I know it's expensive, don't get me wrong. But about 10 years ago, it was out of this world.
Well, because I remember one time we were at a Toronto Marlies, like the minor midget game, and we were talking to a dad, and we started talking about that. And his son had, there was about a week left before the playoffs. So there's maybe about a month left of hockey. And his son was on his third pair of skates. He had a growth spurt. So he said, how expensive? Like, and those kids are high end, right? And then
were talking to a guy, though, a special team, though, wasn't it? It was Marlies, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Toronto Marlies. Yeah. So these guys are high end kids, like 15 years old.
Yeah, they were.
And so this would have been about 10 years ago. And as you say, the price of the sticks have gone down, but not much. And he said he had spent $5,000 on sticks that year.
I believe it. I tried to make a stick that, but just wasn't, it was a good stick, but it didn't quite, and they are so light now. I mean,
but that's the thing they have to do, Dad. Like, they're talking about, oh, we got to get more kids involved in hockey and all that. Somebody has to step in and drive the cost down, because this woman said, it's insane.
But the sticks are, I have to admit, the sticks are pretty good. You were talking about a guy that a goalie was banging the stick, and he said, if that kid breaks that stick.
Oh, that was me?
Oh, that was you.
I said to Dell, because you know how they bang the stick when the guy's coming out of the penalty box?
Yeah.
And he's banging the stick. I said to him afterwards, Dell, if you break that $350 stick, banging because that kid's coming out of the penalty box, that's it. You're playing with a taped-up broken stick.
Yeah.
So every single time he banged the stick, he would look up. Even when he was 15, he'd look up at me, and I knew he was smiling underneath that mask.
Yeah. Well, I remember a couple of times we were at games, and it would be like a Tuesday night, so it would just be parents in there. And I remember we were at Iceland, which was really quiet. We were sitting next to a dad, and I knew his son was a defenseman. And first period, he wound up, took a slap shot, and the stick just exploded so you could see the dad.
Oh.
And then the third period, same thing happened. And you could just hear the father just scream, just, son of a... Because he knew there was about $300 worth of, back then, maybe $400 worth of sticks that were
And
broken.
You got to get good sticks. Say number one, the number one stick. And Jimmy next door... buys the number one stick. So what are you going to do? Buy number three
sticks?
Oh,
absolutely. And the difference in the goalie sticks, I mean, I really truly could see the difference between an expensive one and a cheap one.
Yeah.
The more expensive ones were as light as a feather, and the cheaper ones were heavy and would slow them down. So we had to get the light ones.
And you can't buy a worse pair of skates for the kid or a pair of pads or whatever. If Jimmy next door is buying an expensive stick, you're buying an expensive stick.
Oh, you have peer pressure
too.
With parents. Don't even get me going on that. Of course you do. But
And you know the other thing, too, that this lady was, she, she had a couple of girls and they played soccer. And I said, well, I said, the one thing you'll learn, I said, hockey has no weekends off. She says, I know. She says, it's the time commitment. She says, I can't believe it. She says, they practice at 6 o'clock in the morning and then go to school. And I said, and she says, I didn't think my grandson would do that. Cause she says, he's, you know, and I said, and how does he, she says, he just loves it. He's up out of bed, ready to go. And so, you know, and
dressed well.
Well, I don't know. You see guys now on TV aren't wearing shirts and ties.
Yeah,
and,
well.
Now they're talking about loosening up the dress code in hockey. You know, they're doing that now. So
anyhow, used equipment. There's nothing wrong with you wearing skates or shin pads or shoulder pads that are used. Believe me. If a guy like Eric Lindros can wear them, anybody can wear them.
Okay, so Dad, we taped this on Sunday, but we want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, or they had a great time. And I know when I was growing up, our Thanksgiving dinner, I always liked it because we always had all the single players over for Thanksgiving. Mom was very, very generous in her time for that. And
remember the time, I remember just sitting here thinking, I think of the time Mark Reum. I play.
Mark Reum.
You remember him, Tim?
I think I was a little young.
Big, tall guy, big, good-looking guy. I think he's from LaSalle, Ontario. Anyhow, I could talk about him. You know what he did? He was playing, and he used to drive back. He used to after the game Sunday in Rochester. He played for Rochester American, and he got in a bad car accident. We're having dinner, and Rose. My wife at the time, she was as thin as a rail. I mean, she was 98 pounds. And I remember Mark Reum, he was a great guy. He said, you ever notice, and he didn't know she was from Hershey, eh? Has you ever noticed the girls from Hershey are short and dumpy? I said, yeah, Rose is from Hershey. he started to sweat like that. I was just kidding.
Yeah.
And
nice.
Yeah, that's the way hockey players were.
Yeah. Well, I remember one time I was a little bit too young, but Mom's told this story many times that you were playing Thanksgiving night. Now this was Canada's Thanksgiving, and then we were celebrating the American Thanksgiving, which
is American November.
What
November.
Is that? November?
In November.
I think it's the third Thursday.
Yeah.
And that is really an American.
Oh, that's big in the States, not like up here. Yeah.
So,
well, it's up here.
So you were playing that night, and normally you had a steak and potato for...
Always. Always had...
You had steak and potatoes, but Mom still made a turkey.
Because we like leftovers.
You go on with the rest of the story, Dad. So that's...
So anyhow, I remember that like it was yesterday. So I said, you know, I am going... I'm sick and tired... of having steak every, and for 16 years, I played 16 years. I'm going to have turkey like everybody else, like all the rest of the players. So I had turkey, and maybe I had a little too much, but anyhow, I had turkey. And I remember we're playing Quebec, and a guy named Guy Rousseau, I remember the name Guy Rousseau, a little blonde-haired guy, and he was one of those guys that if you ran out to hit him, He'd turn and he'd hit you with his bum in the back. Oh boy, you were done. He'd be going full tilt, and you think, you got him lined up. Well, I did that. I had him lined up. He come down and he turned and he hit me right in the stomach. Oh, I went down. I was sick to my stomach like you couldn't believe. And I think if I had had a steak, I'd have been sick anyhow. And I made a vow then I would never have anything else except roast beef or a steak. I would never have turkey again.